Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mike McNamara to the broadcast. Mike is the Chief Information Officer of Target, a $72 billion revenue retailer based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. As Chief Information Officer, Mike is responsible for information technology operations throughout the retail company's stores, distribution centers, headquarters location, and international facilities. Prior to Target, Mike worked at Tesco, serving as CIO, Operations Development Director, UK IT Director, and CTO of Tesco.com during his over 16 years with the company. Mike received his Bachelor of Engineering degree in Civil Engineering from the University College Dublin. I recently caught up with Mike at his office in Minneapolis, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 3, Project and Portfolio Management, as we discussed the development of an agile business organization, and Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed how IT works with marketing and other divisions to provide customers with the best possible experience. We also discussed the differences in retail across the United States and Europe, the innovative workspaces that Target IT has implemented in and nearby the Target headquarters, Mike's own experience in coming up to speed at Target, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Mike McNamara, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Peter.
Great to see you. Mike, we're sitting in your office here at the headquarters of Target, and I've just had a chance to walk around a little bit, and I was struck by the number of spaces that seem to be fit for purpose, where things have been rethought to accommodate the kind of work that would be done in the space as opposed to the traditional offices and cubes. And I wonder, obviously, this is audio and not video. I wonder if you could take a moment to describe some of those spaces. I know some of them predate your time here, but the way in which the company has thought about designing the office space to make people as productive in their collaborations as possible.
Sure. One of the things that struck me when I joined about 9 months back was exactly that, how well designed and how well architected the space is around the work that needs to take place rather than vice versa, trying to fit work into a whole heap of cubes. So we've got a wonderful space called Target Plaza Commons, which is really just an open seating area. You can sit outside during the summer period. Obviously, you can't do that in the cold of winter in Minnesota, but it's got nice fireplaces inside. And it is just a great place, a relaxing place to go meet. Or actually, I've used it myself just to bury myself in a corner over there with earphones on to get a little bit of peace and quiet. There is a great hall, again, a fabulous meeting space for people. Our product development people have their own innovative space with maker bots, all of those kind of things. So the workspaces have been absolutely designed around the work that needs to happen there. From a technology point of view, clearly, as we've moved most of the teams to Agile, we're taking down all the partitions, and teams work at very, very long tables with electrical outlet and LAN connection points in the middle, and they're surrounded by whiteboards. Probably the best space we have in technology we call the dojo, where my teams go to learn more about Agile and more about DevOps. It's a kind of an immersive experience. They take their work with them, they go to the dojo, and they stay in the dojo for anything up to 6 weeks. But it's just one big, huge, empty room with, say, long tables and whiteboards. But it's just fabulous. I mean, it gets a bit noisy in there. It's probably the only downside. So people do wear their headphones when they're doing the work. But the energy is magnificent. Mm-hmm. You know, of having 20 teams who are working together to create something, it's just fabulous. Mm.
You mentioned, Mike, that you joined roughly 9 months ago. You joined from Tesco, an organization that historically had been very progressive in its use of technology. And I know from your experiences across retail, especially the experiences most relevant of late,
you've had some methods that have served you well to get to know your business and your business's customers. Mm-hmm. And I think that oftentimes IT leaders have a bit of a distance from the end customer, often referring to their colleagues as customers, as opposed to recognizing that customers are the people that provide the revenue to the enterprise. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the methods you have historically used and recently used for that matter, in order to ensure that you and your team have that customer perspective.
Sure. It's vitally important that you actually touch base with your customers, your real customers, not your business partners. I've been absolutely driven on the fact that customers are the people who come in and buy things out of our shops. They're the only customers we got. Everybody else is a business partner or a team member. So I've always taken the time to try and understand what our customers or target guests really, really want. And that can involve spending weeks out in stores. I mean, again, in my old company, I'd spend a week every single year working in a store, doing all the jobs that a store team member would do, whether that's filling the shelves, taking in the deliveries overnight, or working on the cash registers. And it's an enormously instructive period. Not only do you understand about the technology that you give your teammates to use to do their job, whether it's working or not, but crucially how it works for the guest. There are lots of different ways I've used it over time. You know, just sitting in call centers, listening to calls, which can be an amazingly sobering experience, especially when you're riding high and thinking that you're doing real well. Then you get into the call center and you listen to all the things that you haven't done quite so well for guests, and say that brings you way back down to earth very, very quickly. But it's vitally important that you get those experiences with guests. I think data can only tell you so much, and all the data in the world doesn't tell you about people's emotional response to things. You really have to go out and talk to them. Target has been fantastic, and then you've set up a guest immersion experience where senior members of the team, including our chief executive, Brian Cornell, who's gone out and done this a few times, go out and spend 3 or 4 hours in a guest's home. Now, the guest doesn't know that they're from Target. They know that they're doing some research into retail, but they don't know they're from Target. They certainly don't know it's the chief executive of Target. There is a big reveal, I think, at some stage during the process. But again, just by talking to people and how they lead their lives and what's in their cupboard and what they buy, it tells you an enormous amount about whether the strategies that you have at 35,000 feet actually make any sense whatsoever at ground level.
And I'm curious, having worked in the same, generally speaking, industry now in multiple countries, you're relatively new to the U.S. Mm-hmm. Most of your career, at least recently, has been in the U.K. As you've gone through some of these experiences, do you find that there are many differences in customer behaviors or customer expectations in Europe as opposed to the US?
Actually, no is probably the short answer. Not only, you know, have I worked in Europe, but also throughout Asia. So I think retail as an industry is changing rapidly, and the catalyst for that change has been technology, no doubt about it. And if you go back just over 10 years, maybe 15 years, technology in retail was all about the back office. Ultimately, like all industries, it was about finance and accounting in probably the 70s and 80s, and then it became ERPs and a bit of CRM in the 90s, early 2000s. And even the internet, although it made a big road, the wired internet made a big change in early 2000s. It's really been in the last 10 years that it's changed enormously, and that's all over the world. So you see that change taking place in China and in Korea and in Thailand as much as you do in the UK and the United States. In fact, it's kind of interesting when you go to, I'm a frequent visitor to India, they'll probably skip the whole hypermarket thing. They'll skip that generation and they'll use the internet really for that kind of hypermarket type experience, and it'll be speciality retailers as it currently is. So I think the overall what guests want out of retail pretty much is universal, that mix of convenience, price, quality, value. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very similar in both territories. I would say the UK is slightly odd, I think, in that it is far more advanced in food and grocery online than the United States. Mm-hmm. And probably internet penetration of some other categories is a little bit further advanced. It's mainly the geography. Places, a small island, densely populated, so the transportation costs are relatively low. So it has a few things in its favor.
For quite some time, omnichannel was the key buzzword across retail. And I know from recent conversations you and I have had that you believe it's kind of a tired word. It suggests something that is unique or other than the rest of the organization, when in fact now it's sort of part of how the company does business across the entire enterprise. Can you talk about your perspectives on that?
Well, I'm glad that the phrase is getting retired, because nobody ever liked it in the first place. But nobody came up with a better one. I went to NRF this year in January, and I've been going to NRF every year for quite a long while. It's kind of interesting as you watch the change in what's being presented year on year and what's happening. It was quite interesting this year that actually the word omnichannel almost didn't get mentioned. So it wasn't up there on the stands. It wasn't in the speeches.
As it would have been in the past, presumably.
As it would have been last year, right, or the year before. Everybody was talking omnichannel. But it's disappeared because it doesn't matter anymore. It is just the way you do business. And there is no real digital divide. There's no digital physical divide anymore. Our marketing is as much about what we do online and on the smartphone as it is we do on TV and on broadcast. We did launch with a designer this weekend, Mary Macko, a Finnish designer. The only advertisements I saw for those were online. So the whole digital is just part of the fabric now of major corporates, certainly of retailers. So thinking about it as two different channels just doesn't make sense anymore. Mm-hmm. The physical fulfillment of what would have been traditionally e-commerce orders goes through our existing distribution network, through the DCs and depots that are servicing our stores, also service our guests. The stores themselves can ship to guests, or guests can come in and collect their online purchases in the store. So we've just moved beyond the having to force two channels together. They are one and the same.
Mm-hmm. How are the topics related to digital? How is online versus offline managed? Who does that work? Is it something that is so distributed that marketing has their own team thinking about these things? Is it something that you're fulfilling on their behalf?
It is completely distributed.
Yes, okay.
You know, if you look into marketing, I don't think that they really think about online versus offline.
Right.
Only in as much as they'd think of circular versus radio ad. It's just part of the arsenal. It's part of their marketing arsenal. It's what they do. Clearly, my team has a huge amount to do in marketing these days. We've got to build a lot of the underlying technology. But the marketing team use that technology each and every day. There is a head of e-commerce, but the reality is that all of his team is massively distributed. We don't have different merchants, for instance, for our stores business and our online business. We just got one set of merchants for apparel, and they buy for both. It's absolutely woven into the fabric of the operation throughout. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with my team. I don't specifically have a digital team. Everybody's digital.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about how your team is organized? How have you divided up different segments of your team?
Yeah, sure. It's fairly, probably in some ways, a traditional type of organization in that I've got an infrastructure team, I've got a security team, and then I've got effectively software engineering teams who are building the software for the business. And those software engineering teams are separated out by supply chain, merchandising, marketing, retail. The big organizational change that we've gone through is not in the last year or two, has not been at that macro level. Actually, it's been how we do work. We've moved everybody into Agile and everybody onto DevOps, and we've moved the business onto a product management type model. We're still going through that evolution. In reality, it's a huge change, not just for the tech team, but also for the rest of the business and how to consume technology and manage technology. So it'll probably take a year or two to kind of bed in, but we've made really, really good progress. Mm-hmm. So now I see my colleagues in the rest of the business really take ownership of the technology that supports their part of the business. So we have full-time people from our retail division working day in, day out with my engineers to create new technology to support, I don't know, shelf filling in the stores or stores ordering or any number of other activities in the shops.
Yep.
So it's a completely different way of working.
I see. And can you talk a bit about some of your priorities for the foreseeable future? What are some of the imperatives you and your team are working on?
Well, I could talk about them two levels, right? Yep. One is outputs and one is inputs. In terms of outcomes, there are two. I mean, it is all about digital, number one, and supply chain, number two. And supply chain sometimes surprises people that actually we've got to invest so much in our supply chain. But the focus on the needs of our supply chain have changed massively, again, over the last few years as direct to guest fulfillment has become more and more important. So if you go back, 5, 10 years, our distribution network and our whole supply chain was geared around sending full cases of product from distribution centers domestically to stores domestically. And that kind of linear flow of good from supplier to distribution center to store was the way everything was done. And now, of course, it's a network. All of our inventory is available to all our guests all the time. So we will ship from the point to a guest that makes the most economic sense at any given point in time, or it gives the guest the shortest lead time. But that means that our that thing that was once linear is now a network. So supply chain and the needs of our supply chain and the demands on our supply chain have changed massively over the last 5 or 10 years. So we've got a huge investment as a business into our supply chain, not just from a technology point of view, but actually from a broader business point of view. The second one is digital, which will be of no surprise as marketing moves from broadcast to personalized, from TV and newspaper to smartphone and tablet. Mm-hmm. So a huge, huge, huge priority for us.
Yep. You mentioned as you spoke about your team that mm-hmm. one of the items that rolls up to you is security. Mm-hmm. And obviously, yours is an organization predating your time here, but like a number of prominent organizations that have had security issues in the past. And I wondered actually if you could give an update as to how things are managed here and sure. your own reaction now sort of coming in behind all of the successful work that's been done since then.
Sure. Target was probably one of the first, right, to have such a major data breach and such a public one. As you say, even since then, more and more have emerged. Having had the misfortune of being first, we're clearly now the poster children, I guess, for those data breaches. It's been traumatic, I think you'd have to say, for the organization, but they've responded tremendously well. You know, gone out and sought out the best experts in the industry and hired them in, put whatever resourcing and dollars that that team wanted behind it. And we've recruited extensively out of defense contractors, and they are bringing a defense contractor type of organization and mindset into retail. And it needs it. I mean, I think it's one of those things that you have to think about every single day. The bad guys are getting more and more capable as time goes by, and the tools available to criminals now were the tools that were only available to nation states 10 years ago. So it has to be a huge priority for any retail CIO. And Target's response has been fantastic.
Yeah. Last question for you, Mike, before I let you go. What trends are particularly exciting for you as you look to, say, 2-3 years out into the future? What are some of the things you're beginning to look into that you think might impact this company and this industry?
I just love open source. I think open source has been just phenomenal. Again, something that's been around probably for 20 years since Linux in the mid-90s. But really has blossomed in the last 4 or 5 years. And the number of new technologies available to people like me to do my job has grown enormously. So only a few years ago, my one choice of database was a relational. And now I've got graph database, columnar, document databases. I've got all different types of tools to do the job. And most of those tools have been developed within the open source community. So I think that's tremendously exciting because the capability that we have as technologists to create and do different things is just growing exponentially. The palette that we have available to us today is many-hued as opposed to the four colors that we had back in the early 2000s. So it's a great time to be in technology. It's a great time to be in retail technology as the industry changes.
Excellent. Well, Mike McNamara, thank you so much for joining me on the Forum World Class IT and sharing a bit of your perspectives on the future of IT here at Target.
Thank you very much, Peter.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' 5 principles of World Class IT. The 5 principles are as follows. Principle 1 is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.